Giribaradare. Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Jamunatiravanachari Jamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Kunja Vihari
Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribraja Kacharya Ashtotara Shata Shishimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribraja Kacharya Ashtotara Shata Shishimad His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Karantara Shimam Bhagavatam Ki Nitai Gaura Premanandi Oh glories to the assembled devotees Oh glories to the assembled devotees Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Oh glories to Shishiguru and Shigauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narajanan Namaskritya Naranchaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayat Udiraye Nasta Praishvatrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttameshloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. Bring it down a little bit, that is, just a little bit. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, entitled Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creation, Chapter 10, and we're going to read all the way from text 39. To text 57, which is the end of the chapter. Yeah. So all the way. The chapter is entitled The Battle Between the Demigods and Demons. And just while we wait for the board, I like to read Prabhupada's summary of the chapter, because yesterday, basically in 2 days, we covered the whole chapter, because the chapter is mostly narrations, very little purport on it. So the battle between the demigods and the demons. So far we know the situation was that I think Nityananda Prana did that just something yesterday about that the demons, just b- by the mistake that Indra makes insulting, I think it was Durvasa Muni, right? He insulted Durvasa Muni, then he lost because of that offense, the demigods himself, the demigods lost all their opulence, so the demons were able to conquer the whole kingdom of the demigods, the heavenly planets. And then in order to regain their place, they approached Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu gave them this strategy that to make a truce with the demons and churn the ocean of milk in order to obtain this most amazing nectar, that it was called the nectar of immortality. Not necessarily because, you know, now they will become immortal, but it was almost like being immortal. It will give such a strength to the body that they will live, you know, with great powers for, you know, almost till the time of Lord Brahma's, you know, lifespan. So, you know, very long. So that was very enticing for the demons, and they accepted the truce, and they churned the ocean of milk. The nectar came eventually. The demons took the nectar. The demons then got cheated by Krishna in the incarnation of Mohini Murti, and the Lord gave the nectar to the demigods. So the situation is that the demons became extremely upset by being cheated in that way, and when they saw the demigods gaining the opulence and the strength that it came from the nectar, so they immediately attacked the demigods. So here's Prabhupada's summary. The summary of chapter 10 is as follows. Because of envy, the fight between the demons and the demigods continue. When the demigods were almost defeated by demoniac maneuvers and became morose, Lord Vishnu appeared among them. Both the demigods and the demons are expert in activities involving the material energy, but the demigods are devotees of the Lord, whereas the demons are just the opposite. The demigods and demons churned the ocean of milk to get the nectar from it, but the demons, not being devotees of the Lord, could derive no profit. After feeding the nectar to the demigods, Lord Vishnu returned to his abode on the back of Garuda. But the demons, being most aggrieved, again declare war against the demigods. Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochan, became the commander-in-chief of the demons. In the beginning of the battle, the demigods prepared to defeat the demons. Indra, king of heaven, fought with Bali, and other demigods like Vayu, Agni, and Varuna fought against other leaders of the demons. In this fight, the demons were defeated, and to save themselves from death, they began to manifest many illusions through material maneuvers, killing many soldiers on the side of the demigods. The demigods, finding no other recourse, surrender again to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who then appeared and counteracted all the illusions presented by the jugglery of the demons. Heroes among the demons such as Kalanemi, Mali, Sumali, Malyavan fought the Supreme Personality of Godhead and were all killed by the Lord. The demigods were thus free from all dangers. So text number 39. Sirobir Uduta Kirita Kundalai Sarambadri sarambadrik bhi paridashta dachadai. Mahabhujai sa varanai sa sayudhai. Mahabhujai sa varanai sahajudhai. Saprastrita bhukaraboru bhir badho. Saprastrita bhukaraboru bhir babho. Sirobir uddata kirita kundalai. Sarambadi brig paridashta dachadai. Mahabhujai sabaranai sahajudhai. Sapristrita bhukaraboru bhir babau. Sirobir uddata kirita kundalai. Sarambadrik bhi paridashta dachadai. Mahabhujai sabaranai hasahajudhai. Saprastrita bhukaraboru bhir babhau. Please chant. Paridashtadachadai. Sirobhi, by the heads, Udutta, separated, scattered from. Kirita, having their helmets. Kundalai, and earrings. Sarambhadrikbhi, eyes staring in anger, although their heads were severed from their bodies. Paridashta, having been bitten by the teeth, the chadai, the lips, mahabujai, with big arms, sa abharanai, decorated with ornaments, saha ajudhai, and with weapons in their hands, although their hands were severed, sa, that battlefield, pratrishta, or prashtrita, scatter, mbuhu, the warfare, karabha urubhi, and with thighs and legs resembling the trunks of elephants, mbabhau, it so became. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In the course of the battle, the war field became strengthened with the severed heads of heroes, their eyes still staring and their teeth still pressed against their lips in anger. Helmets and earrings were scattered from the severed heads. Similar, many arms decorated with ornaments and clutching various weapons were strained here and there, as were many legs and thighs, which resemble the trunks of elephants. Text number 40. Translation. Many headless trunks were generated on the battlefield. With weapons in their arms, those ghostly trunks which could see with the eyes in the fallen heads attacked the enemy soldiers. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. It appears that the heroes who died on the battlefield immediately became ghosts. And although their heads had been severed from their bodies, new trunks were generated. And these new trunks, seeing with the eyes in the severed heads, began to attack the enemy. In other words, many ghosts were generated to join the fight, and thus new trunks appear on the battlefield. Pretty far out. Text number 41. Translation. Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows and attacked Airavata, Indra's carrier elephant, with 3 arrows. With 4 arrows, he attacked the 4 horsemen guarding Airavata's leg. And with 1 arrow, he attacked the driver of the elephant. Purport. The word Baham refers to the soldiers on horseback who protected the legs of the carrier elephants. According to the system of military arrangement, the legs of the elephant bearing the commander were also protected. Text 42. Translation. Before Bali Maharaj's arrows could reach him, Indra, king of heaven, who is expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counteracted the arrows with arrows of another type, known as bala, which were extremely sharp. Text number 43, translation. When Bali Maharaj saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus he took up another weapon, known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand. But Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. Text number 44, translation. Thereafter, one by one, Bali Maharaj used a lance, prasa, tomara, ristis, and other weapons. But whatever weapon he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. Text number 45, translation. My dear king, Bali Maharaj, then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. A giant mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers.
So you're fighting and then you go like, what?
A giant mountain. Text number 46. Translation. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire. Chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. Text number 47. Translation. Scorpions, large snakes, and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars, and great elephants, all began falling upon the demigod soldiers, crushing everything. Can you imagine the scene? So first that gigantic mountain, the trees and fire, boulders, and then a whole bunch of animals, you start to fall on the heads and crushing them. That's all supposed to be an illusion. But they were being crushed. Text number 48. Translation. O my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons, completely naked and carrying tridents in their hands, then appear, crying the slogan, cut them to pieces, pierce them. So, my God. Text number 49. Translation. Fierce clouds, harassed by strong winds, then appear in the skies, rumbling very gravely with the sound of thunder. They begin to shower live coals. Text number 50. Translation. A great devastating fire created by Bali Maharaj began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as the Sambardaka fire, which appears at the time of dissolution. Powerful Bali Maharaj. Text number 51. Thereafter, whirlpools of sea wave, agitated by fierce blasts of wind, appear everywhere before everyone's vision in a furious flood. So it was not enough to create a mountain that was showering, you know, animals, huge elephants and tigers and lions and burning trees and stones, you know, falling. It was not enough to create, you know, demons just, you know, falling into this, crying, you know, crush them. Then he created this fire, and then this created this flood. So there was no exit. Text number 52. While this magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons, who were expert in such illusions, the soldiers of the demigods became morose. So the whole thing was an illusion that was created by Bali Maharaj and his and the demons, who were invisible. So when you think of an illusion, it's something that is not happening, it's not there, but you know, but that's what you see. So I'm assuming as a weapon, the demons were creating this and then bashing the demigods, who were like completely bewildered by the illusion. So they will be killed by the demons like that. Text number 53. Translation. O king, when the demigods could not find no way to counteract, when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appear. Text number 54, translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes resemble the petals of newly blossomed lotus, sat on the back of Garuda, spreading his lotus feet over Garuda's shoulder, dressed in yellow, decorated by the Kostuba gem and the goddess of fortune, and wearing an invaluable helmet of and earrings. The Supreme Lord, holding various weapons with his eight hands, became visible to the demigods. Text number 55, translation. As the danger of the dream ceases with the dreamer's awakens, the illusion created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental powers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he entered the battlefield. Indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. Text number 56. O King, when the demon Kalanemi, who was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead carried by Garuda was on the battlefield, the demon immediately took his trident, whirled it, and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, master of the three worlds, immediately caught that trident and threw that same weapon and killed the enemy Kalanemi along with his carrier, the lion. Purport. In this regard, Srila Madhavacharya says, Kalanemi adhaja sarve karina nihata api karina nihata api sukre no jivita santa punas tenaiva patita. Quote, Kalanemi and all the other demons were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, and when Sukracharya, their spiritual master, brought them back to life, they were again killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text number 57, translation. Thereafter, two very powerful demons named Mali and Sumali were killed by the Supreme Lord, who severed their heads with his disc. Then Malyavan, another demon, attacked the Lord with his sharp club. The demon, who was roaring like a lion, attacked Garuda, the Lord of the birds, who are born from eggs. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, uses this and cut off his head, the head of that enemy also. Purport. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the 8th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Battle Between the Demigods and the Demons. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaja Chakshur Umiltam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurube Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satarine. Vancha Kalpataru Vyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So, any questions? No. No. There is a very very wonderful events that are narrated, and also want to continue more or less. Now we're going to be entering, or this whole series of events are going to be highlighting a great, great personality whose name is Bali Maharaj. So, in one sense, you know, we can just spend the next few, minutes just trying to, you know, become familiar with Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj is considered one of the 12 supreme authorities in Vedic wisdom, in transcendental knowledge. See if I can see the, if I can have the 12. So we have Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Prahlad, Bali, Bhishma, Yamaraj, Sukadev Goswami, then, okay, help. Narada, thank you. We need two more. Narada, and the four Kumaras, I said. Kapila is one. And Vyasadev, okay. So those are the 12. So now, among those 12, Bali Maharaj is very fascinating, because Bali Maharaj was the king of the demons. And of course, Prahlad Maharaj also took the function of being the kings of the demons. But Prahlad Maharaj, from his very birth, from his even within the womb, from his very conception, he was already manifesting the qualities of a Mahabhagavat devotee. So Prahlad Maharaj never assumed the activities of a demon. From the very beginning, he manifested the activities of a great devotee, very completely absorbed in the service of the Lord. But Bali Maharaj is different. Bali Maharaj has a whole arch that we follow, that, you know, we're going to see how through the narrations, you know, we just read, right now we're reading Bali Maharaj as the leaders of the demons who were constantly fighting and struggling for superiority with the demigods. And he was not only a powerful leader, but a very capable leader. Actually, the demigods, they have, in order to counteract Bali's progress, they constantly have to, you know, call for Lord Vishnu. They couldn't hold on their own, you know, against Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj was a very extremely capable leader of the demons. And we're going to continue hearing through the narrations as it's going to come, you know, how Bali was able to reconquer the whole kingdom of heaven. And so he acted fully as a leader of the demons, and he displayed the prowess of the demons and the whole mood of the demons. So for him to become one of these 12 Mahajans among, you know, these other great personalities who exemplify all the qualities of the devotees, then is a very fascinating thing. So what do we know about Bali Maharaj? So Bali Maharaj was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj's son is Virochan, and Virochan's son is Bali. So he took birth in the dynasty of Daitas, which are demons. And so the same line that, you know, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, that whole line, dynasty. So However, when Prahlad Maharaj received a boon from Lorna Sringadev, Lorna Sringadev says that not only him, but when he asked for the liberation of his father, then Lorna Sringadev said, not only your father, but actually your descendants, generations of generations and generations of your descendants will be also protected by me, will be, you know, liberated. So Prabhupada always emphasized that point, that if we want to really serve and benefit, you know, our duties with family, but the best thing is that we become a pure devotee, because by becoming a pure devotee, it is explained in the scriptures that 10 generations, or 10 or 20, I can't remember, some huge amount, 10, I think 10 generations that coming and 10 generations back will be all liberated. So here's such an example of Bali Maharaj. And so he is the son of Prahlad Maharaj's son, and he grew as a king of the demons. So he grew up in an environment of, in the association of demons, in an environment of demons. However, he had as a grandfather Prahlad Maharaj. So he had the association of Prahlad Maharaj. So no doubt that Bali Maharaj was, it was just by the association and just by the blessings of Lorna Sringadev to Prahlad Maharaj, he already inside covered, or he was already a great personality, you know, one of these Mahabhaga personalities. But due to the association and the environment, he basically that got covered. And but the great character was there, and it was a matter of uncovering that great character, the character of a pure devotee. And and then we're gonna see the arch, you know, in the several narrations that we, you know, gonna be reading in the Bhagavatam. I mean, we saw that how Bali Maharaj, seeing that the demigods were cursed by Durvasa Muni, immediately he took the opportunity. Now is the chance, they're weak, and he conquered them. He basically massacred them. So he conquered. But it is explained in the Bhagavatam, I think we read, that when the demigods went to do the truce, he was respectful. You know, he had great character. So although some demons were saying, no, 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 kill them. You know, we don't need to do anything with these weak fellows. Just kill them. Bali Maharaj received them and discussed with them, and then, you know, God, okay, you know, they're weak, we can take advantage of this nectar. So, and now we see through the whole pastime in which it was clear the position of Lord Vishnu. It was so obvious, you know, that every time through the pastime, Lord Vishnu was the one who was basically solving the problems, all the tribulations, you know, that they couldn't solve. You know, when the mountain, they couldn't move the mountain. So who moved the mountain? So Lord Vishnu just put the mountain in the bag of Garuda, and then the what's the name of the mountain? The Mandara Hill. So when when the mountain was put in the ocean, the mountain started to sing, and they brought them, Lord Vishnu brought the mountain again. So like that, the supreme position of Lord Vishnu was clearly displayed through this whole pastime. And Bali Maharaj could see that. Bali Maharaj could see that. Actually, all of them could see that. Obviously, a demoniac mentality cannot acknowledge the superiority or supremacy of the personality of Godhead. The demoniac mentality will totally disregard the personality of Godhead. So that's what we see, that's what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita when he says, you know, abhajananti mad mudha tanushin tanu ashita, that, you know, the demoniac mentality is that you disregard the personality of Godhead. So, but Bali Maharaj can see. Bali Maharaj can see. However, still he have that whole, his whole character has to be uncovered. And we see that through the life of sometimes the pastimes of great personalities, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this, you know, Mahabhagavat devotee, you know, the seventh Goswami, in the beginning of his pastime in this world, he have to go through a time of not being full, that whole devotional character was not fully manifested. So then it took a particular series of events for that full character to come out. Same with our Srila Prabhupada. It took the event of coming together with his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, for that full character to fully manifest. You know, it was there, but not fully manifested. So, with Bali Maharaj, is taking a series of events to actually uncover his character, and it's a wonderful thing that we can follow, you know, through the narrations, how, you know, Bali Maharaj comes to, you know, that famous, you know, full surrendering to the Supreme Lord when he comes in the form of Lord Vamanadev and wanted to place the third step, and Bali Maharaj gave himself, and then he was rewarded with the Lord's blessings like that, and his position as an authority became fully acknowledged and manifested. So, and this is from a personality who was, you know, like right now we see acting as, you know, a leader of the demons and really, you know, being very inimical towards the demigods. And the power of Bali Maharaj when creating this illusion was only to be counteracted by the personality of God. He have to come and basically dispel the whole display of power that Bali Maharaj was, you know, doing with his illusions, you know, these magical things. So this is part of the weapons or war strategies that demons use. We see also in the narrations of Ramayana that the demons, you know, Ravana was using that, and also Indrajit, Ravana's son, was very expert in creating these illusions, and they will disappear in the sky, they will become invisible, so it was almost impossible to fight, you know, for an ordinary, the ordinary soldiers, they were completely bewildered. So only the Lord was able to counteract that type of, you know, warfare skills, you know, that the demons will have. So the display that is narrated here of Bali Maharaj creating these illusions to basically completely crush the the demigods was, it's pretty far out, no? You know, the creation of that huge mountain and then the rain of all kinds of things, including big animals, you know. I mean, imagine just being on the receiving end of the whole thing. You know, I mean, just the fire trees just falling from the sky and the boulders is just enough. But okay, we start with this, and then when they're trying to fence themselves from boulders and fire trees, then it comes a whole bunch of animals and scorpions and lions and elephants just following you, and then okay, then demons just, you know, naked, you know, meet a man-eater demons, you know, with tridents, you start to fall, you know, and to complete it, then a huge fire that resembles the fire of devastation that happens in the world, you know, when the partial devastation takes place, then, you know, a huge fire burns the whole place. So something like that happened, and then this big flood. So they were finished. And so the Supreme Lord appears and dispels the whole thing. Part of things that we're gonna hear in the further narrations is how they were brought to life by Sukracharya's powers. Sukracharya is descendant of Bhrigu Muni. So he's a descendant of Bhrigu Muni. So he's a Brahmana, but he was materialistic. So he have very selfish materialistic purpose. He was using his understanding and his Brahminical knowledge to fulfill his material purposes, and thus, however, he had the power to give life. There was, you know, the demons that were killed, including, we're gonna hear in the next chapter that is coming, that Bali Maharaj gets killed by Indra. You know, once Lord Vishnu appears in the battlefield and he basically kills the demons, then Indra was able to kill Bali Maharaj. And then Sukracharya came and gave life back again to Bali Maharaj and all the demons that were, you know, the leader demons. So, and so the narration comes, you know, more to come to that. But we have to pay attention to the arch that follows, you know, Bali Maharaj, how his great character, his devoting, you know, the great authority of devotional service becomes uncovered, which is quite wonderful. And especially when you see that this is a serious demon, you know, I mean, he was displaying, you know, he was the leader of the demons, and really powerful, and the demons will follow. So, you know, we're gonna follow that. As it is right now, it is very clear to him,
you know, that Vishnu at all times in this pastime, Vishnu is the one who is displaying the supreme powers, that no one can, you know, that just to observe the demigods taking shelter and the demons, no matter what the power will be, Lord Vishnu was always displaying his supreme powers. So throughout the pastimes of the churning of the milk, the ocean, the milk ocean, and through this, throughout, the position of Lord Vishnu was very clear. The regular demons, they forget, they can't see. Bali Maharaj, he's, because, you know, because of his connection with Prahlad, then the understanding is there. And we see now, when Lord Vamadev comes, then he immediately, you know, he could understand Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He had that understanding. So this all being reawakened by all these wonderful pastimes, and now the spotlight is going to be on this great personality, Bali Maharaj. So we continue hearing. Any comment or questions?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. You were mentioning that if one becomes a pure devotee, then generations before and after become, at least they get some benefit, we don't know what, but so when we hear the word pure devotee, we hear Prabhupada usually says purity is the force, then we can please the Lord. And I guess I'll connect this to the Mother Jasoda pastime. She obviously tried to tie Krishna, but in the end, it wasn't up to her. It was her determination, but Krishna's mercy in the end. And so when we see that pastime, we may think, yes, she's a pure devotee. But we also hear pastimes like Bilva Mangal Thakur. You know, from a external point of view, he wasn't as pure as Mother Jasoda, but he still obtained the same result because of his determination. So my question is, how does one not become discouraged? Because when we hear the term pure devotee, we can also see that, you know, whether we're pure or not, it's not really up to us, because in the pastime of Sobari Muni, he was pure, but he committed offense, and then the Lord made him attracted to fish, and then he fell down. So how does one, my question is basically, it seems like, at least from my own spiritual, you know, to not get discouraged, it seems like determination seems to be supersedes whether we're pure or not, because that's not really up to us. We could always be determined, but, you know, whether we're pure or not, that's really up to Krishna. But so how does one essentially not get discouraged when you hear the word pure devotee? When you hear the word pure devotee, you're like, okay, I'm out the door, I'll never please Krishna. But then we hear the passing of the boat, Mangal Thakur. So can you expand on this point?
Yeah, I think that we can see the achievement of pure devotional service as, you know, from the experience that we have of achieving something in this world, that that is, you know, of a temporary nature. That's the experience that we have. You know, you can have a goal. You know, I want to achieve this, and you achieve it, and, you know, but it's not ruled by achievement is ruled by the material energy. That's the experience that we have of achievement. So it's not, you know, like something that we can do by our own efforts or buy or things like that. Pure devotional service is something else. Pure devotion, becoming a pure devotee means, you know, you actually regain fully the, you know, your eternal nature of, you know, pure love for Krishna prema. And that position in itself is not something that we can measure or try to understand, you know, from the experience that we have in this world. So when someone becomes a pure devotee, is someone who has again, you know, fully awakened or received, you know, Krishna prema, and that's what I understand is explained, you know, that if you achieve that position, then yes, that is the uttama, pure devotee. Any of us is engaged in pure devotional service, but we may not be pure. Most of us are not pure devotees. We can be engaged in pure devotional service when a pure devotee is engaging us. You know? But our consciousness is not pure, but when we're engaged by someone pure, then we engage in pure devotional service. So it's about the being able to reach that pure consciousness. And when you do that, when you reach, you know, this prema stage, then yes, then that type of benefit that others by your association have, then it will happen. That's my understanding. Any other comment or questions? Okay. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.